You're listening to Pirate Cat Radio, KPCRLP, 92.9 FM, Los Gatos, and beyond. Tony Duchesne here, and welcome to Drinks with Tony. This week on the show, we have Kes Trester. She is the author of To the Nines. It's book three in her series, The Nine. We discuss in this episode how to safely chat with grocery store clerks about suicidal thoughts, how to find a husband at Hollywood parties, to structure or not structure a novel, and so much more. Hey, join me this month in Read Along with Tony, October 11th through 26th. The book we're reading is Last Summer in the City by Gianfranco Kalajarich. Why do I get authors? It's hard to pronounce. This book was published in 1970, and it's a drunken crawl through the streets of Rome. Kalajarich was mostly known for his screenplays in Italy, including the 1970 film Violent City. Born in 1939, Gianfranco is currently 85 years old, and he's still with us. Read Along with Tony is a discussion group and Zoom meetup. So if you haven't read a novel this year, this is your chance to get at least one novel in before it's already 2025. If you've read 50 novels this year, join our community and let's dive into this brilliant 165-page novel together. That is Last Summer in the City by Gianfranco Kalajarich. Go to drinkswithtony.com to join Read Along with Tony Duchesne. And now, on with the show.
Hi, this is Kes Trester, and you're listening to Drinks with Tony. Get on the Drinks with Tony show.
Yeah. All right, we'll start the show.
All right, bring it.
Yeah, you're listening to Drinks with Tony. I'm your host, Tony Duchesne. Today on the show, we have Kes Trester. She's the author of To the Nines. It's book three of the Nine series. Kes, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Did I say any of that wrong? Because I think I did, huh?
Well, I have the third book is coming out. It's a series. I write young adult and new adult books. And this is the third in the series that's coming out October 22nd. My debut novel was a boarding school thriller called A Dangerous Year. And that came out also YA. And that came out in 2017.
Oh, okay. So when you worked on your debut novel, were you thinking, I mean, I only got one novel out. So you got a novel and a trilogy going on. So I'm asking you for my benefit. I don't care too much about the audience. I'm like, oh, okay, how does this work? Was your first novel the novel that was published? Was that the first novel you wrote?
No, it was my third. You know, I'm so envious of these young writers too. They write a book and they send it out to a single agent who says, it's great. I'm going to sell it at an auction. And they do. And it's, you know, that's the fantasy. It hasn't been my reality. This is my third book. It was my second book that got my agent's attention. And this is the third book that I wrote that sold. But since then I changed agents and now I have these three going. But unfortunately, my agent has announced she doesn't want to represent young adult anymore. So I'm sort of at a crossroads. I mean, I'm still writing the Nine series, but maybe I'm getting a little too into business and not enough into entertainment. But that's what's going on.
Hey, agent, you want to lose your cash cow of a series? Okay, I'll take it somewhere else.
I love her though, so I'm very sad that she doesn't want to do YA. But you know. Everything always works out, you know, it's always for the best.
Always for the best is a very optimistic thing to say. I don't know if it's for the best, but I do feel like that things work out by not only how we respond, but how we keep diving into like, okay, that didn't work out. So the path switches. And then when the path switches, it's almost like there's anti-fragility that happens. And then they're like, wait, we find another pearl in this game.
Well, I'm on the third chapter of my career. And so I have rolled with the punches, making adjustments as I needed to for family. You know, I had kids. Lifestyle, you know, maintaining a marriage. I have great friends, and so
Yeah.
I have made
What
choices
are
in
you
my
writing
life.
books for? You sound happy.
Part of being happy is writing books. In fact,
Oh,
my
okay.
first career was as a creative executive in feature films, which I loved. And you know, I was working with interesting writers. I was making weird little independent movies that were a blast. But then when kids came along, you know about the film business, it's not really conducive to a family. And so I took my entertainment experience and was fortunate enough to get hired as head of production for a TV commercial company. And that was hands-on producing. I was making TV commercials. And you know,
Now
it
wait,
was
now what,
fun.
now what, now put down for me, I'll say for the audience, for me to
Okay.
understand that, what is the difference between being in creative development in the indie end versus working for commercial TV spots? Is that more of a is that a schedule thing where you're
Yes, it's
where you have
much more
more
of
of
a
a goal?
9 to 5, 9 to 6 kind of
Okay.
gig. With film, you know, it's funny, my son has followed me into the film business, and he's working for a major producer, and he has my life. You know, his morning, it starts with coffee with a writer, and it ends at, you know, 11 o'clock at night with drinks with a manager.
Oh
And
my
that
God,
was
I
my
want that
life.
life. But I want that life, but as a novelist. I've done film too, but there's just I'm a cantankerous old man. I'm starting to realize. I was sitting at the cafe today, and there was a group of kids doing software, and they took up a whole table as they were doing their code. And I'm like sitting there going in to read a book, because that's what you're supposed to do at a cafe: read a book and talk to people. And then like the three people around me were all they all had screenplays up on their
Yes.
computers. And I'll just never do that because I feel like that's public masturbation. I just if I'm writing, I'm handwriting, and it's rewrites on a novel or something, or I have a book and I'm at a cafe. I don't want to disdain the cafe culture with that vulgarity of these people with their they even bring two monitors with
Yeah,
their
that's not
computers.
me either. I
Yeah.
also the
I don't
noise,
know why I just went there.
conversations. I know, but you
I
know
think I had
the
an
Starbucks
aneurysm.
mix, you know, I can't
Right.
listen to that. I you
Yeah.
know, I as I mentioned before I went on the air, I live on the beach. And
Yeah.
so, you know, there's no better place to write than to the sound of waves. And
Oh,
so, yeah.
amen.
Well, I'm just up the 101, so you know, have
All
considerable
right.
travel.
All right. All right. I'm taking you up on that. I think the train goes there too. If I go out of
It
if
sure does. In
Amtrak
fact,
goes.
you may hear the train go by. It's the Amtrak Surfliner,
Oh,
and it
that's
goes behind
rad.
my house. So, yeah,
Oh.
I actually love it. So, but you may hear a train whistle while we're talking.
When I grow up, I want your life, even though we're probably the same age. Yeah.
Oh,
All right.
man.
So then you get so it sounds like you had a perfect career for raising kids.
Yeah, well, you know, film, as I was mentioning, is an all day, you know, 7 day a week kind of thing. You can't really have a schedule. And then my kids started wanting, you know, expecting their mother to show up occasionally. You know, can you believe
Yeah.
it?
Yeah,
And
yeah.
so
You're
in
like, look, I could be
commercials,
a crack mom. I could be on the
yeah.
streets, but look at me, I'm a productive mom. I just can't show up.
Yeah, exactly. And so commercials, yes, unless you're actually shooting, you're on a sound stage and it goes late. It's 9 to 6. I was home for dinner,
Oh.
and yes, and I had my had it my made a deal with my kids. I could have at least one dinner out a week, you know, with a creative or with a director or whatever.
Yeah.
And but what I missed was telling stories and working with screenwriters. You know, I love the writing brain, and even though I hadn't written a screenplay myself, you know, selling hamburgers isn't really a fulfilling career. I remember once spending 45 minutes on the phone with a creative agency, talking about the color of a golden retriever's fur and what looked best on camera for a dog food commercial. And I thought I was going to go throw myself out the window. I mean, I like dogs, but you know, 45 minutes talking about fur. It's like, I
And
think
you were only two floors up, so you just sprained an ankle. You're like, God, I
Well,
wish
I
I was
was
11
actually,
stories up.
my office was on the corner of Sunset and Cahuenga. So I was only
Oh.
two floors up. I was across from the CNN building. Right
Oh,
above
you're right there.
Groundworks. Yeah, that was a
Oh,
great office.
that would have been a terrible place for me to work when Amoeba was there, because I would just spend my whole paycheck every lunch break.
It was fabulous. They had all kinds of signing events there. I loved it. And then the Hollywood Christmas Parade went by on Sundays, once a year, and that was a blast.
Oh, cool.
But anyways, I needed to tell stories. And so I think it was after that Golden Retriever phone call, I went home and started noodling what, I need to write, I need to create. And I had no clue what I was doing. So after about 6 months of continuing to have no clue, I started taking classes at UCLA Extension. And I think I
Oh,
saw
I
in your
teach
bio
there.
that you teach there. And I had a couple of great classes, all about, structure, really, because I knew screenplay structure and I was trying to write a book in three acts. And as if you read my books, you'll find out they still are very much in three acts because that's the way I think. And they're also structured very cinematically, set up, payoff, by this page, this happens,
Oh, interesting.
which is why, after my first book came out, UTA called. And because it is very easily adaptable material, because that's the way I think. And but anyway, so it took me about 2 years to write a very bad novel. And but in that period of time, I learned how to write. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to trash this thing because as a writer, you can only write something over, 400 times before you can't even look at it anymore. So I wrote my next book, and I went out on query. It didn't sell. I didn't even get an agent. And then, oh, no, actually, the second one got the agent. And then while that one was on submission, I wrote my third book, and that one sold pretty quickly.
And I love this story because it is a story of determination. And because writing novels is one of the, I like when I teach screenwriting now, but I used to teach novel. And I would tell them, I'm like, this is one of the worst ideas you are making in your life, like right now. At the same time, it's one of the greatest things you could do for your soul, because I feel like reading novels and writing novels really, it shifts the mind. It kind of saves me when I'm going through. When I'm going through hard times, I have a novel I can come back to at night. I have a relationship with the novel that I'm writing. I have a relationship with the novel that I'm reading. And these things kind of set me straight. So for me, but at the same time, I'm like, if you guys are trying to, like, I have these students who are just like, I'm just trying to write something marketable. And I'm like, wrong answer for the 10th time. Your scenes suck. I'm trying to get you to help to work your. I know, but they're marketable. My producer told me that if I make this, then it could be. And because I was trying to write screenplays, but I can never get anything done. I'm like, stop thinking of marketing. Would you just write? And so I was that teacher where people are like, I'm dropping this class and I'm going to the other one. He's mean. He's mean. He's mean.
But that's how you learn. And I have had writers tell me that they don't have time for further education because it interrupts their writing time. And it's like, okay. And I also have a secret weapon. My brother is an A-list film editor, and we have spent decades talking about film structure. And
Oh, fun.
it has been great. In fact, he has written a book which he has not, he's going to self-publish it. It's what every first-time filmmaker should know from an A-list editor.
When does this come
Because,
out?
I actually sent it to a press, a small press, and they said, and he has a lot of wonderful
I
anecdotes
need him on my
about,
show. That's I just I'm just
oh,
telling you,
I'm
he's
sure
already
he'd be happy.
booked.
He's between films. He has two films out right now. It Ends With Us with Blake Lively, and which was one of the most talked about films of the summer. And then Monster Summer, which just opened on Friday. And so, but anyways, he is my secret weapon in that he reads everything I write. And he has also helped me, with structure, imposing structure. And I think, as a novelist and as a screenwriter, that's probably one of the most important things you can do. I mean, you're the teacher, so I will let you school me on this. But I find structure, once I have that, everything sort of falls into place. I can plot and plan and do my character motivations as long as I know where I'm going.
I'm going to school you on this.
Okay, you do.
You're doing it absolutely right, because what we need to do is find our own processes, and that's your process, and that works. And it's like, I don't want to get in the way of anybody that's has a working process. My process is different, but that doesn't work for everybody.
What is your process?
Well, it's a lot slower, and it doesn't use as much structure. And this current novel that I've feel like I'm on a final draft now. I worked for 2 years on it, and then I sent it to my old agent who dropped me. But she's just like, she's like, this is really fresh and funny. Let me offer this to six other, refer you to six other agents. And I was like, great. And then I realized there was a big tonal shift and a little bit of a plot shift that I could do that would make the book like 10% better. And I was like, do I just get on my next book, or do I make this book 10% better? I'm like, I will never be able to live with myself. Yeah, if this sells now and I never do the work to make it that 10% better, I won't be able to live with myself. So I've been working on that for a year and I'm close to the end of that. But that was a lesson. And I wrote a book that's publishable for 2 years, but it wasn't the book. I had to learn how to write the book. That's the book now that I feel I was trying to push something a little too much, and I needed to open myself up to the book and go, wait, I stopped serving the story. Yes, it's funny, but I need to like tone down the comedy and bring up the darkness. And then it actually becomes funnier because it's completely absurd, but I had to do it. It's driving me crazy. I love these characters, but I want to puke when I look at them. It's like being married to the wrong person. And you're going, you know what? That gas that you passed last night when I was sleeping, it's awful. It's awful. You're killing me. So anyway, I'm at the end of my relationship with this lovely group of characters, and we're working together. We're working it out. We have co-custody of the kids, essentially. This is where we're at right now because I'm trying to get the divorce and give it to get it out there.
And you're probably writing much more lit fic than I am. I mean, I'm writing genre fiction, and it's fun. Yeah. It's you know, it's page turning.
Yeah,
it's a bit of an adventure. You know, because like with the nine, you know, there's murder and betrayal, mm-hmm. and you know, that she's fighting for her life more than once. So, you know, it's more high adventure than it is, you know, interior. What am I trying to say? What you're writing, you know, literary fiction.
Right. I love all, like, people have come to my class, like, I'm really sorry I'm writing romantic comedy. I'm like, do not apologize. It's just as important.
Especially because it's selling right now.
Well, not even that. It's just, I feel like everything's important. If you're writing from your heart, then you're writing what's important. And it's just like, if this is coming from your heart, then it's important and it touches people. And I love some of Meg Ryan's movies. You have no idea how many times I've watched French Kiss and I still almost cry at the end. And people are like, are you sure you're straight? But... and they're right. I don't know. Maybe. But.
Yeah. Well, I write to entertain myself. Yes, these are books that I would read.
Yes. That is the whole formula.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when I was a kid, the guys got all of the good roles in the books. They, you know, James Bond or Robin Hood or Three Musketeers or whatever it was. The men had all the fun. And I was like, no. And so in my books, it's the girls who have all the fun, the young women. And that's why they're very proactive. You know, I'm always throwing them into danger. I often call them badass female characters because that's what they are. But that doesn't mean that they're superheroes they're not flawed. They all are very flawed. But, you know, they wouldn't be likable if they weren't. And so those are the books I like to read. And that's what I'm writing.
Who were some of the authors when you were young where you were like, oh, I connect with that? That's a hard question to throw at somebody when we're fans of writing and all writing. So I understand. So you can go,
classic,
come back later.
I'm going to say, although there is a book that I have loved my entire life, and it's sort of the classic writer's answer, and that's Little Women. You know, Jo March, doesn't fit into you know, her little mold that she's supposed to fit into, but she has a voice and she has to use it. And that is a book. And, you know, I didn't know I was going to be a writer when I read that, but I just latched onto Jo March, her independence, her agency, that she wasn't defined by her love interests. And that pretty much sums up who my characters are. They're all variations on Jo March.
Isn't that great?
It's fun.
And people always are worried, like, oh, I don't want to write that because it's already been done. I'm like, oh, no, everything's been done.
Oh, absolutely.
It's what you bring to it that'll be different. But everything's been done, and embrace it. Just let people go, oh, that's derivative of Dave Eggers. And it's just like, no, it's a homage. Keep going. So you have a standalone novel that you finish, and it does exceedingly well because you get a 3-book deal after that. Do you get a 3-book deal, or are you working on this?
I got a 3-book deal.
Did you propose it?
The 9, though, as you know, and my publisher has said we'd love to see it as a 9-book series. Mm-hmm. And so each book has a satisfying ending. Each one is driven by a mystery, a murder. Because I hate series where they don't end it each one in a satisfying way. It's like, I have to wait, 6 months to a year to find out what happens next. I hate that. And so while the, yes, it's episodic in a way, like a TV series is episodic. Yeah. But I conclude each overarching mystery in each book. So you know who the murderer is, or you know what, the big mystery is solved. So you're not left like, But I hope readers are then saying, oh, I can't wait to see what choices she's going to make with the relationships that are around her. She has two men surrounding her, and they're both sort of professing their love and affection. But are they really? Can she trust them? They have ulterior motives. I mean, doesn't everybody have an agenda? And here's an 18-year-old young woman who is trying to figure out what everybody's agendas are. And just like in real life, we don't know. And she's going to make mistakes. And so there will be betrayals. There already have been. And so if I get a chance to write a 4th book, if this sells well enough, I will get a chance to write a 4th book. And I can't wait if I can.
Yeah, because it sounds like you've developed a relationship with your character.
Absolutely. Yes, I love my characters. Do you dream about your characters when you're deep in writing?
Oh, that is a good question. No, I think I have too much trauma and other things in my life. I guess the dreams I remember are the ones where like, wow, that was something. Okay, let me write this in my dream journal and save it for therapies.
Well, I find that when my books are working, that I dream about my characters. And that's always it's a good sign when I'm like, oh, yes, all right, I'm on the right track. And so, yes, I do dream about these characters.
It just popped into my head. You know how dream when you get that little trigger and then it's like, oh, wait.
Yeah, oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And I do have dreams where I'm talking about writing this book and talking about the character's name Sebastian. So I'm talking about Sebastian to other people. And then last night I had this weird dream where I got my passport and I needed a visa to go to Hungary. I don't know why. I don't know what that was about, but I'm like, okay, well,
okay.
Note to self, I guess I got to visit. I got to go to get some Hungarian.
You've got a big European trip planned in your future. Definitely.
I got about 3. I'm location scouting the world in a way. People go, this is a joke that I came up with a while back. But it's just like I know something's changing. I don't know where I'm going, but it's either Barcelona or Burbank. It's just like a change needs to happen, and it might be on the other side of Earth or on the other side of the 5.
Well, I'll meet you in Barcelona. I'll be there in April.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Have you been before?
No, not to Barcelona. I'm a big traveler. When I was a kid in my college summers, I'd go on those, 23 countries in 5 days kind of trips, where you're just constantly moving.
Oh, okay.
And so I, every summer I waited tables through college just so I could save up enough money up to live, obviously, but also so I could go somewhere, and I had to go someplace cheap because I was a college student.
Yeah.
And one summer I camped the Australian outback, and that was amazing.
Wow.
But yeah, I've been to probably about 40 European countries at this point.
Yeah.
And have not been to Africa yet. That's on my list. I've been through Asia. So yes, Barcelona will be something new. I have not been there, and I'm looking forward to it.
That is so cool. What a fantastic way to get into like just what I only traveled a couple times for a lengthy period, and I grew up in a way that you weren't supposed to travel unless you were a missionary for God. So I grew up in this very strange setting. So when I did finally start to travel and just go, oh, wait, I was still in the belief system, but I was kind of bucking the narrative a little bit and just going to visit, you know, and even walking into churches was a bad thing. But I went into churches and just like, don't tell anybody, but I went into Notre Dame. You know, it's anyway, but I feel like those travel experiences changed everything. And it wasn't even that much of not a ton of travel experience, but it changes who we are when we do it when we're young.
It's huge. I wish every American could travel, mm-hmm. you know, because, you know, it increases your empathy and your understanding of your fellow men, no matter where, you know, other cultures.
Yeah.
You know, I love other foods. I love having conversations with people from other cultures, other countries. I badly stumble through local languages. I try and learn enough to say, you know, can I have a glass of wine? And, you know,
yeah.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah. And
so,
one more glass of wine. And
there
can I
you
have
go.
one more
there
glass
you go.
of wine?
Yeah. And so, you know, my mom kept encouraging me to go. She was an essayist and a very interesting, educated woman. And she traveled extensively. And she said, nothing will open up your mind and make you more humble than by traveling. And
Yeah.
she was right. And so I've also drugged my kids as much as possible around the world. And and I think that it's made them kinder individuals, more aware of the world around them.
Yeah. More realizing that we're not the center of the world. We're
you know, and
we're a
living in
part
LA,
of a
it's so easy to feel like you're the center of the world, you know, and with
yeah.
both my kids in the entertainment business, you know,
yeah.
but they're both gatekeepers in a certain way in the film business. So yeah, I'm special. I'm a hotshot, but you know, they know they're not.
Yeah. 'Cause they've been in places.
Yes.
Everyone needs to go places. Yeah.
Yeah. And they
My friends.
understand it's not, LA is not real.
Yeah.
It's
Like the
just a
gap.
microcosm of weirdness.
Yeah, the idea of a gap year like Australia has is just so. And I love that if you don't have your gap year on your resume and you go straight from regular school to college, that you're like questioned, why didn't you do your gap year?
I wish we could all have a gap year. I couldn't afford it. I just did it in the summers, you know, and I waited tables, you know, 9 months out of the year so I could do this. But I think it would be great if we could get, you know, Americans out into the world more.
So
But
your mom was an essayist?
She wrote a lot of feminist essays. No wonder I'm writing badass female characters. I was raised by a very strong, independent woman. She didn't write essays that you would hear about, but she would get published. She, you know, would say, oh, got a $500 check in the mail for I just sold an essay to this magazine or that journal or whatever. And she would write about censorship and feminism and, you know, politics of the day. So that's who raised me.
Oh, that's cool. That's so much fun. Someone I had on the show before, Hilma Wolitzer, her daughter is Meg Wolitzer.
I think I know that name. Yes.
Yeah. Her daughter's Hilma's work, and she's in her, I think she's in her like 90s now. It's just so crazy. But she was writing these, you know, kind of women forward essays in the 1960s, and that's just. And I went and had, last time I was in New York, I went and had lunch with her because I'm just like, I just need to be in your presence. And because her presence is just amazing. And it's just, you know, it's just, those are the people where I kind of just bow my head and go, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for
Absolutely.
doing what you did at a time where it wasn't, you know, it wasn't
agree.
like now. It's so beautiful. So.
Yes, I agree 100%. But it also made me crave being with interesting, literate people. And I enjoy, well, let's go back to wine, a bottle of wine with, you know, a writer like you that we could talk about books and art and, you know, politics, world events, anything. I just find it very interesting.
It's one of the reasons I do this thing, because I could do drinks with Tony and me and you can have a conversation and
yes.
we wouldn't have met in real life. And then I get to just sit here and have a conversation with another book geek.
Yes.
So like,
yeah.
oh,
okay. Yep. Here I am. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So if you don't do the fourth volume for the nine, what is the next project? Are you like giving yourself a break from the novel and working on something else? Or are you back on something?
Wow, that's a really good question. I actually a film executive who was interested in one of my books. He took me to coffee and we were talking and he says, why don't you write a script for me? And it's not like he's going to give me a contract and pay me up front, but he goes, because we were talking about challenges, and he wants to write a book. And I was like, well, then go write the book.
Yeah.
And then he goes, well, then why don't you write a script for me? And so that has been in the back of my mind.
Oh, that's fun.
But it's such a different format, as you know.
Yeah.
You know, dialogue is king in screenwriting. You know, it has to propel the story forward and, you know, and really expose your character. Whereas, you know, I can spend, you know, 2 pages on internal monologue and you can know my character or her actions and all that. So for anybody who hasn't written both, it is apples and oranges. There's nothing the same about it. So he did start get me thinking though. And I'm with your students though. I want to write something that sells. I have a lot of friends in the business. And so if I write something that I know I can get it seen. And so, I also have, I get the studio mandates. So I know who's looking for what. And so, you know, I would like to pick something that I think would be, have a hook. I want to write something commercial. But I also want to write something fun. As I said, I like to entertain myself. So that may be part of it. And then absolutely another book. Do I stay in the YA realm? Do I explore something more genre for an older audience? Mm-hmm. I haven't decided. I have ideas, but I'm not sure which one yet.
Yeah. Well, you've done well getting 4 books out in what? Within a decade?
Yeah, and
I mean, that's fantastic.
Yeah, well, it's actually less than a decade. I've published in, 7 years? And the last 3 were all written within 4 years of each other. And so when you have a deadline, the last 2 were within, you know, 2 years of each other.
Yeah.
It's been busy.
Yeah. Yeah, my deadline is death. I'm like, how many do I need on the bookshelf before I die?
Although part of that sounds so amazing. When I turned in my final draft of the third book, I think I slept for about 3 days because I just hadn't slept in months. And so I have this sense of freedom right now. It's like, ooh, what do I get to do?
Yeah.
So, I can't wait to write something, but I love the freedom that I'm feeling right now.
Yeah, I call it, you're a bicyclist. Do you remember the term bonking when you bonk?
No, I don't.
Oh, because I was a lonely bicyclist because I couldn't associate with, you know, people who weren't of my religion. So I bicycled all over the place. It was one of my only outlets, and I subscribed to Bicycle Magazine. And they always talked about bonking, which was when you hit your threshold, and you're like, even when you're doing like going up steep hills and you just hit the threshold and your brain and your body both is my thing.
Okay. Yeah. I do know the feeling. I didn't know the term, but man, do I know the feeling.
Yeah. I told this to someone else and they're like, I don't know what bonking is. And I'm like, oh wow. Cause I always use it in my, like when I'm writing, and I like last week I totally bonked. I didn't realize that I was also sick. I think I had like decaf COVID. I didn't have any. So I was just like, I just couldn't even get my body out of a chair. And I'm going, I think I bonked and I wasn't feeling well at the same time. And it was just hurting my soul to not work on it like kills my soul when I'm in the middle of a project to not be at it every single day. So, and then I finally realized, oh, wait, dude, I think you're sick. Would you just relax and just lay down, let your body do its thing. Love your body because of the healing mechanisms that it has. Yada, yada, yada. gratitude.
Yes, but as you know, when you're on deadline, you wake up every morning and you have that internal countdown. Okay, I've got, you know, 107 more days before this draft has to be turned in. So get up, get to your computer, get writing, do it.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those writers who writes and edits at the same time. I don't know where this rule came along that you should just spew out an entire draft and not go back and edit. I don't know how people do that.
I think that's a rule that punishes some people because they think they have to do that. And then they get overwhelmed and they don't write.
And don't you also find when you're editing that it sort of exposes more of your character's motivations and their agendas? I mean, I find it for me that my characters and my story gets richer if I edit as I go versus trying to spew out a whole draft and not really know where I'm going. I mean, I do have a roadmap. I'm a plotter. But again, I have to stop, you know, at every signpost and say, where am I? How are my characters feeling? What's happening?
Yeah. I wish I did that more on this book. I am doing it more on this book, but as of this draft. But
Well, what are your rules? I mean, I try not really to have any rules. And whenever newer writers ask me, so what are the rules you live by? And it's like, I can only give you advice. There are no rules. Please don't try and write to somebody else's rules or advice or whatever. So what is it when someone asks you, what is your rules or advice for writing? What do you say?
Show up. That's the
Yes.
that's I mean there are, and more days than not I don't want to show up even to this book that I've been showing up to, but the satisfaction of it's almost like doing yoga. Whenever I do yoga, I'm like, before I get the mat out, I'm like, this is the worst thing I want to do in my life. And then when I'm 10 minutes in, I'm like, why am I not like springing to this? And I have this constant, I want to, I want, I was even thinking about that today because I have this, I used to be, I'm a little sloppy still, but I used to not do my dishes for a few days. And now I do my dishes immediately when I'm done with them. And I was realizing it, and I'm like, this isn't even a chore. This is just an automatic response now. I don't feel like I'm doing dishes. I'm just satisfied with the meal that I ate. And this just is now motion that goes to put dishes on the dish rack.
That's a
And
good
it's,
analogy to writing, actually.
yeah. And I was like, whoa. And then, I don't know why that went to writing. I guess, because just showing up on the, me showing up on the yoga mat. I'm like, I gotta get that way on the yoga mat. So it's just, I'm on the mat and I don't even realize it. And then like, as I'm doing my, little frog poses or bunny or whatever, that I've been learning, then it'd be like, oh, wait a second, I'm doing yoga. I totally forgot because my mind was another place, but my body's in a pretzel right now and I need to get out of
Yeah,
here.
and is your mind on your writing? Because I find that exercising, I do some of my best work as I'm doing a damn sit
Oh.
up, and I don't want to do five more of those. And I start, so I start focusing on something else. And then I think, when they say that, you're trying to solve a problem in your writing, you should write 10 different ideas. Never settle for the first one.
Yeah.
And so I start cycling through ideas. If I really explored this character and what his choices are, and so. What if he made this choice? What if he made that choice?
Yeah.
And that's gotten me through a lot of sit-ups and a lot of push-ups throughout the years.
You're like totally like got the six pack abs and they're like, oh my God, you
Yeah,
must
you
really
can
be
tell my
committed
writing is, yeah. You
to
can see my
you're
writing is
committed to
going by my
fitness.
biceps,
Oh yeah, and then yeah, and the other writers are like, oh, you've had a good writing few months, haven't you? That is funny. Yeah, it's what do you call it? Yeah, I mean, it's essentially just showing up. I teach at the library once a month, just like an open creative writing workshop, which is so much fun because it just
Which library?
Los Feliz Library,
Ah, okay.
and it brings in like everybody. I got like regulars, and then I got these people walking in that are just like looking around, going, "What am I doing here?" And I had this one lovely student this week, and she was a little older, and she said, and I have a lot of Q&A and try to, really engage everyone with her questions. And she's like, everyone just seems so knowledgeable here. I don't want to ask any questions. I'm like, no, that means you. I was like, that means you need to, because you know why? Your question, we probably, if it's something that maybe a so-called beginner, we need to reflect on that ourselves. So please. So her question was about Scrivener. And she's
Oh,
saying,
God.
she's going, and she was like, I
Oh.
took this tutorial and I'm like, wait a second. Are you writing right now? No, I want to be a writer. So I downloaded Scrivener and I'm like, don't even look at that thing. What you did is you just bought like what you did is you bought like a entire leaf blowing gas guzzle thing, leaf blower pulling just like that. I don't know if you heard that outside. And then there's a piece of dust on the counter that you're trying to get rid of with a big leaf blower that's blowing. It's just like, you don't need that. You just need a pen and a paper. And it kind of blew her mind. And she's just like, I'm like, just write every day. You're not going to need Scrivener for a year. If you even use Scrivener. I don't use
If
Scrivener. It's
ever,
too much for me. It's I don't
it's
want
too
to.
much for me. I bought it when I was writing my third book, thinking,
Yeah.
okay, I'm a professional now. I have an agent. I should write on Scrivener. And I spent several days working on that. And I realized I was just getting so worked up about this software and I wasn't creating and it wasn't satisfying and I
Yeah.
didn't need all the bells and whistles. And I went back to writing in Microsoft Word, which is what I write
Yes.
in. And I love it. I, you know, it's, if it's not, you know, broken, don't fix it. And so I've
Yeah.
written now 8 books in Word, and I can't imagine going into a different software at this point.
It's it, I just, you know, I get it for screenwriting and for final draft. I mean, that's industry standard. You have to do it. Because especially when you turn in a script on final draft, the other departments are doing reports on it that I don't even know what or why they're doing, and it goes I'm like,
Yeah, and I like Final Draft, but and
yeah.
it has some aspects of Scrivener, but it's not the same.
No, it's not. And it's just like, even my outline, I have a handwritten outline of where I'm at and where I need to go right now on a yellow legal pad, and that's what I'm referencing. And it's just like, I don't know, maybe I'm being nostalgic for a time, you know, 50, 60 years ago, where like novelists had to handwrite or type. And it's just like, or maybe even before that, where there wasn't a typewriter, and it's just like, well, I can't, you know, I'm writing on a quill.
You don't keep a notes app on your phone open all the time, just adding ideas as you go along, because your phone's always with you. And
Right.
so that's, I mean, I always have my notes app going, and I have
Oh, okay.
probably 18 files on my notes app, everything from script ideas to what a character that, you know, needs to be further developed. And so I can be on a dog walk, and I was like, oh, ah, you know, and I just pull
Yeah.
out my phone, I make my note, and I can keep going. So
I
I have to
use
say that.
paper because I started using notes because I got a portable keyboard since we're gonna be traveling soon, and I have a big old I got a word processor I clunk around with me, and that's my laptop, and it's just like it's an old word processor from the 1990s that I can
But what
put
if you're
in.
driving someplace, or you're, you know, just someplace without your stuff? How do you
Oh, at
remember
this.
when you have an idea or an inspiration? What do you do?
I'll call myself and talk into my answering machine.
Okay.
Yeah. But
I
yeah,
sometimes I used to send myself emails,
yeah.
and I have an email draft that's not addressed to anybody that's been going for about a year with some ideas. And as I add to it and I subtract, and it's available on my phone and on my computer and my iPad. So wherever I am, I have this growing file on one idea, that,
Yeah.
like I said, it's an email I don't send. But I also have my notes in my phone, and
Yeah.
my notes app, and I love it. I talk to it. I, you know, it's my
Oh, 'cause
friend.
you get wait, you could dictate into
Yeah, if I'm
notes.
at a
Oh.
stoplight and I have a great idea, I pull up my notes and I say, you know, this is my great idea, and then I keep going. And
Oh,
so
see, I don't know
for
how to use
me,
that
I
yet.
have
That's the only reason I haven't done it. I'm
it's
sure
so easy.
after today, I'm gonna learn how to
If you
use it.
have an Apple phone, you have the
Yeah.
notes app, probably on
Okay.
your main page.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Okay, but I haven't used it with a voice. I only just bought this portable foldable keyboard that works really well. So I'm just like, okay, now I can type at a cafe if I'm in, Porto and not have a laptop with me, because I just do not want to have a laptop with me at any of these places. I don't want to be that guy where they go, oh, great, there's a digital nomad.
Yeah, gotcha.
And I'm just like, no, it's not me. It's not me, man. Look at my bank statements, and then look at the sale, look at the terrible sales on my book, and look at how nobody reviewed the film. I would have done better at Trader Joe's. You don't understand, man.
No, you would not be happy at Trader Joe's.
Who knows? Maybe
Those
this.
poor people have a script. I mean, really, would you really want to have a script you had to recite with every customer?
Oh,
How's
yeah.
your day today? Are you doing anything fun? What's going on later? I can't tell you those three questions I have been asked over and over and over again.
Interesting. See,
And someday I'm going to give an answer that's probably going to make them want to call the police. But I have wild ideas of how I'd like to answer my next Trader Joe clerk. So.
I was just at Albertsons, and I saw this comedian in front of me that I know, and I was just like, oh, hey, dude, are you getting stage time or whatever? And I haven't seen him in a while, and he's like, how's the book? And I'm like, well, I got to do it. I'm doing this latest draft, and I like kind of want to kill myself, but I know it's good, so I guess I'm in the right spot. And the Parker's just looking at me, and I was like, oh, you didn't realize you were getting two suicidal guys in your lane today. That tends to be the conversations I have with people at Trader Joe's, and that tends to be very normal. And so the people at Trader Joe's kind of know me, and some of them are like,
They kind of always slow down with me too. Well, the ones who know me, like, they go real slow because they know we're gonna have a good conversation. The one in Silver Lake is just like,
I'll have to remember that. Okay.
Just be utterly honest. Like, how's your day? And I'm like, God, I'm feeling so middle-aged today. This sucks, you know? And then they're like, and the kids are all, wow, what's it like up there in middle age? And you're like, let me tell you, kid. There's something about there's something about authenticity and also letting people know that you're just like, look, I know I'm the old man to you, so don't worry about it. Let's just get this clear right now. And then they're like, oh wait, we can talk about that, you old fart. And I'm like, yes, we can. What do you need to know? It never gets better, it gets worse, you just get more pain.
I disagree. I think it does get better. I think every year life gets better.
Now, what is your? Now, I agree with you. I was being facetious there, but what is
Yes,
your?
of course.
What's your formula for life getting better, other than a wonderful family, having great kids, living in Ventura, and watching the beach?
Making choices that will make you happy. I can't tell you how many times I've seen people, especially in their personal relationships, who know they're unhappy, but it's what's expected of them, either to stay or to, subjugate themselves or whatever. And I am always very clear on what I want in my life and in my relationships. And I'm very fortunate to have a man who got it from the get-go. We've been married more than half my life.
Oh
And
my God, you are a unicorn, and so is
I have a
he.
very successful and happy marriage, and it's because my husband listens to me. And when I say, this is working for me or this is not, he'll say, okay, all right, I hear you, and let's make a course correction. And we
Oh.
do. And I'm always saying, well, what about you? Do you want to say anything to me? And he goes, no, I'm happy. This is good. And
Yeah.
so he lets me make the choices that I need to make, whether it's when I left commercials, I was actually selling a book, and I was like, please don't make me, sell shampoo anymore. And he was saying, fine, not a problem. Come home and write full time. And at that point, my kids were heading into the danger zone. And because
Doing
I lived in
crack
LA,
and heroin and stuff.
almost private
Oh no,
school in
really?
LA.
Yeah.
Both my kids were in private school. My daughter was in the girls' school in LA. You'll know which one. It's the elite girls' school, but it's
Is it near
fabulous.
AFI? Is that the one? No.
No, not that one.
Oh,
It's
okay.
the one in Hancock Park.
Oh, okay.
And it's amazing because all the girls, it's they who can be the smartest. And it's that is it, there's really no drugs, there's no sex, it's all girls. I didn't worry about her. It was my son who was running with a very fast, the spawn of celebrities. And so somebody needed to be home to make sure that, he wasn't hiring a hooker at 13, So I came home
Oh,
and stories I could tell you about private school of
wow.
celebrities and moguls and all of that. Back to school nights were a trip, let me tell you. And although the best conversation I had at back to school night was with the late James Caan, and our sons were friends. And he was hilarious. My favorite back to school night was with him as a dad. But anyway, so we decided
I
it was
like
time
him
to.
because he did Bottle Rocket. Yeah, didn't he? Didn't Wasn't he the one that oh no.
I
Am I
don't think
thinking
that was,
the
but he was the Godfather. He was,
Right, exactly. I think he was in Bottle Rocket.
he was a wonderful actor, but
Yeah.
he was a hilarious person. And
Yeah, oh that's good. I love
because
that.
he knew who I was, Luke's mom. He was very friendly with me, and
Yeah.
but a very funny guy. I
Yeah.
enjoyed him. But anyway, so it was a twofold thing for one of us needing to come home to keep the circus going, and then letting me write. And because I was selling, it seemed to work out. And so I've been selling books ever since.
Wow.
Yeah,
And
it's been
is your
fun.
husband in the industry or not?
Not at all. I met him at a Hollywood party, and I swear he was the only guy not in the business. And it was like, oh, because
Wait,
I met him when I was.
Marriages that last as long as yours happen to be when you meet at Hollywood parties?
I met him at
Am
Jack
I
Haley
doing the
Trivia
wrong
House.
thing?
Yeah, do you remember Jack Haley? He was the son of the Scarecrow in Wizard of Oz, and he was married to Liza Minnelli. He used to
Oh
have
yeah.
legendary Hollywood parties.
Yeah.
I was this young 20-something executive, and again, I met a guy who was not in the business, and I was thinking, how refreshing! I won't spend Sundays, you know, saying, what's the box office this weekend? You know, we'll actually have conversations beyond Hollywood. And so we hit it off, and, you know, here we are two kids later, and still he makes me laugh, and we're having a good time.
Congratulations. That's better than That's better than any book deal. The book, the book deals are
icing on the cake. I'm very blessed to have such a fun and amazing life, I have to say.
And does he like to travel too? Is he, does he
very much, very much. In fact, I was under deadline last year and I could not get away. And he said, well, I really want to go bike through France. And I was like, well, go bike through France. I have a book that I have to turn in. So he went and biked through France and had a great, great time. So yeah, we travel, we're skiers. Not as much as we used to, because I'm a little more fragile than I used to. My knees aren't what they were when they were 20. But yeah, we're travelers, we're active travelers. And he especially is interested in people. He's a chatty Cathy. We can go anywhere, and within 10 minutes, he has met his new best friend. And so we meet everybody and have conversations with anybody. And it's fun.
That's all. I'm divorced. So I was married for a while. And it used to drive my ex-wife nuts that I can make friends with anybody. She's like, I don't know how you do it. And it would get her mad, because I would meet her, the people that she worked with, and they're like, she's like, they like you more than they like me. And it was, but it was like, she was literally mad about that. And I'm like, why are you, I should realize. No, there was like some insanity going on in there. I didn't realize, but you know, I'm sure I was a thorn in her side too, because I just saw life differently. But yeah, if I'm traveling in another country, then I haven't done it in a while because I had, health issues. So now I can again, but like back in when I was like in Prague, and I would learn a phrase like my pencil is blue in Czech and just do it so earnestly at a bar. And they would be like, and I'm like, my pencil is blue. And I'd just be like, and they would just be like, oh my God. And they'd be like, and then we'd start to talk, and then there'd be someone English there. But if you kind of go in with this like earnest handicap, all of a sudden you kind of get to know everybody.
I find there is one phrase that opens up every door. I'm from LA. Los Angeles.
Really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Do you know villain, the most popular movie star? Do you know Tom Cruise? Tom Cruise and I, we're old friends, you know?
Yeah.
Of course, I've never met the man.
Oh my God, I get his cocaine.
Everybody wants to talk to you if you are from LA. And so that is the magic phrase when you travel.
Interesting. Yeah. Cause I used to, like, when people in the '90s, maybe like, where are you from? I would say I'm from San Francisco. I wouldn't say I'm from the United States. And then that would lead the conversation to immediately like, oh, no way. You know,
exactly. Yeah. You don't necessarily the States, you say the city that you're from.
Yeah.
And that definitely opens doors.
I am from Hollywood. And they're like, oh, it must be great. And you're like, yes, the homeless encampment under the 101 is kind of close where I live.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, the place, the part that's really smelly and there's that guy screaming at you.
Right. Yeah, there. I live two blocks from there. Yeah, that's my house.
I did something really stupid. I took the bus to San Francisco. I know exactly. And I just thought it would be easier because it's right out of Hollywood, and I'm just like, oh, I can don't have to deal with LAX or whatever. But it's funny because I got out and I was kind of having a rough time even going up there for so many reasons. And I'm walking in front of the Chinese Man Theater, and this woman's bugging me, you know, for money, like in a big way. And it's like 7 a.m. And then she starts screaming at me, and she's like, you get the F out of here. F you. F you. She's screaming at the top of her lungs. I'm like, this is how Los Angeles treats me when I'm going to San Francisco. Huh? are you giving me a sign, Los Angeles? You want me out of here? Is God speaking through her right now?
Oh, and see, I wouldn't think that. I would say, you know, this isn't the place I'm supposed to be, so I'm going to make a new choice, and off I go. So,
because you're smart. Because you meet the right guy at a Hollywood party, and it works.
Yeah, yes, I'm one of the rarity. And I was there, believe it or not, with the literal Miss USA. Never walk into a party with Miss USA or Miss America. It does not go well for you, generally.
Why is that?
Because she is gorgeous. And, you know, and so the men are beating a path to her. And, you know, all of the producers, you know, are all saying, you know, come here, darling, let's talk. And so I was sort of sitting there in the corner. And that's why I met the one guy who wasn't in Hollywood, because he's, you know, it's like, well, hi.
I mean, haven't these people seen a beauty pageant? The questions they ask and then the answers these people give, and you go, oh, that's why.
You walk into a Hollywood party with an absolute stunner, and nobody really wants to have a conversation with her. Really? You know, they.
I don't know. I'm the guy that if I go to any party, I look for the other weirdo there. That's just. I know there's another weirdo around, and I just go, "Hey, dude, what are we doing here?" And then he's like, "Oh my god,
have you made any good friendships doing that?"
Oh, that's a good question. Most of my friendships have been through, writing, and also my San Francisco friends. There's a lot more longevity here because I didn't come down here. I came down here a decade ago, but with COVID, it feels like less than a decade ago. You know, it's like all of a sudden.
Yeah, I understand that.
But yeah, Los Angeles travels very differently. I was even thinking about that today. Just the sprawl of LA, just the sprawl of LA. Just still disconcerts me to no end. It almost hurts my senses. And I don't even like having a car. Like when I lived in San Francisco, I didn't need a car for most of my life. I was on Muni. I was taking cabs. I was DJing at the bars that were in the corner, you know, up and down my street. I was writing for the San Francisco Chronicle. I had a very different life there. And
yes, absolutely.
Something much healthier for me about being in Los Angeles, because once you're out till 4 a.m. and you're DJing and they're giving you free drinks and then you wrote up a band in the newspaper and they're like, oh my god, it's you, and there's more free drinks. And after a while it's just like, wait, I do this 4 nights a week, and then I turn in my articles. I write through the night and turn in my I'm not Hunter S. Thompson, I'm in my 40s.
I was gonna say, it sounds like a pretty fun lifestyle though.
It was, but there's some point where I'm like, maybe I went a little too long on that. Maybe I could have cut that out a little earlier, even though it was beautiful and wonderful at the time. But
yeah.
But I mean, right now, like, it's the new punk rock to me is being at home and with a book at 10 p.m. and just going.
Yes, I agree. 100%.
It's
so what are you reading now?
I am reading The Savage Detectives. I just finished, because I haven't read that, Roberto Bolaño. And I just finished this Japanese author, Convenience Store Woman, which was a fantastic book. It blew my mind. And I really liked it a lot. Yeah, Convenience Store Woman. I forgot what the author's name was. But I just finished that, and I just started Savage Detectives. Because I've tried to read 2666 by this guy, and I kind of get through it a little bit, and everyone's just like, no, you gotta read Savage Detectives, dude. I'm like, all right, that's next on my list. But what I read this year that blew my mind was The Count of Monte Cristo.
Really?
Someone told me, they're like, dude, it's really good. And I'm like, 1200 pages? I'm like, okay, I'll give it 50. I'll give it 50 pages, and you know, and then I'll just be like, oh, that's cute, and it's not for me. No, I devoured that book. That book like grabbed me, and it blew my mind. It was so good.
Well, I read that book to my son in sixth grade.
Okay.
I wanted to read it.
Yeah.
And I figured this is a good, Alexandre Dumas. It's a great action story. And we loved it. We read it together and loved it. So yeah, I mentioned Three Musketeers earlier. You know, I read everything he wrote. I love his book. It was just so fun.
That's the first time I've ever read him. I'm playing catch up on a lot of stuff that I didn't get to read when I was younger, because I had to read a certain set of literature of Bible stuff. So there was, I was very constrained into my 20s. And then since my 20s, I've been trying to catch up with life ever since.
Yeah. Well, as I mentioned, there wasn't a lot of YA adventure when I was a kid. So I was reading all of the classics.
Yeah.
Because that's where you could find the adventure. And and my mom would take me to the library every Saturday and say,
oh, your mom is rad.
Yeah,
and this was in Ventura?
This was in Camarillo. I grew up in Camarillo, which is, for anybody who's not in California, it's sort of midway between Ventura and Los Angeles. And we had a great little library. In fact, I talk about coming home. They're doing a an author event for me with the third book at the Camarillo Library, so I'm very excited about that.
Oh, fantastic.
But every Saturday, I go and exchange my dozen books that I already read for another dozen. I was that bookworm kid, and so yes, I read all of the classics as a kid, except The
Oh,
Count of
that's
Monte Cristo. And so I did read it for to my kid, and it's no mistake that he's also going into the film industry and being, working in production, because he learned storytelling whether he wanted to or not.
No, and that's and I and the like the idea of film structure, because I've been teaching screenwriting for 5 years now at UCLA Extension, and I just love film structure so much, even though my heart is in the novel. And if they put a gun to my head and they said screenwriting or novels, I'd be like, novels, like without even a thought. But I do love screenwriting, and I
Okay.
love,
Why novels without not even thinking about it?
This is a very much longer story, but novels kind of seriously saved my life when I had serious depression and a friend of mine had killed himself. And I tried to go to my congregation elders, who spun me in circles. And instead of going to Bible study 3 nights a week, I went to the library 3 nights a week to figure out how not to kill myself. And I did that by reading Tony Robbins. So, but Tony Robbins like saved my life in a weird way. And then as you were at the library, you start to find other things. And I found novels. And then I started reading these novels, and I was like, oh my, this is a conversation I have never even heard of in my life, because no one's ever talked to me like this. And that's when I was just, that's what opened the door. That was like, wait, there's something else out there that's not constant. You know, I don't have I don't have anything wrong with Christianity, but the way I had it was not good. So it's just like,
That's why banning books is just making me furious. The knowledge they want to take from young people, and a lot of it is about young people learning about who they are, in through these books. And how dare they, deny these children the opportunity? I mean, I learned who I was through books, as did you. You found, what was important to you through these books.
These books were banned, like, not by government, but by my little enclave. And then so I got to, and then I got to like just read this stuff and just go, this speaks to my soul. Oh my God, there's other people out there that are weird like me.
There is a cute little subversive book that just came out, called Lula Dean's Little Library of Banned Books. It's a really fast read. It's light, it's funny, but it's about a woman who finds validation in her little Georgia town by banning books. And yes, and it's touching. And I don't think I'm giving too much away by saying in the first chapter that she opens her own little library in front of her house of books she approves of. And in the night, somebody comes and takes off the dust jackets and puts beneath them the books that have been banned, the books that we all know and love that are being banned. And these books find their way into the hands of people who need them in this small Georgia town. And it's if there's ever an argument to not ban books, it's this delightful story. So if you're looking for something a little lighter to read, I would recommend that.
That sounds good. I love light reading too.
Oh,
Thank you. Kes Trester is the author of To the Nines. It's book number three in the Nine series. Kes, thank you so much for coming on the
that
show.
went by so quickly. I've enjoyed talking to you very much. You and I could sit and have a bottle of wine and continue on. So maybe I'll come find you in that cafe in Los Feliz.
Let's do it. Kes Trester on the show. Thanks for listening. Check out her new book, To the Nines. It's book three in the Nine series. And sign up for Read Along with Tony, October 11th through 26. Go to drinkswithtony.com to join us. The book we're reading is Last Summer in the City by Gianfranco Caligaris, and it's published in 1970. It's a drunken crawl through the streets of Rome in the late 60s. What a beautiful place to bring our minds to at this time of the year. I'll see you next week. You're listening to Pirate Cat Radio, KPCRLP, 92.9 FM, Los Gatos and beyond.